Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
I have this new book that I've written, and it's all about this psycho-spiritual disease of the soul that is potentially destroying our species. And so, you know, indigenous cultures from time immemorial have been tracking this, and I've just translated it into a psychological modern idiom. And so that's what I would love to talk about today.
Okay, I'm here. And sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. I freaking hate Skype sometimes, especially when you first start coming on the show and it completely drops off and takes about like 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 6 minutes to reset. That's really irritating, as if I wasn't irritated enough already starting off with this program. Okay. Paul Levy, glad to see that you've got your webcam on. Glad to see that we can hear you speaking. And glad to see us all here now, nicely and freshly. Before we begin this interview, I just need to say a few things to the audience. Is that cool, bro? Because the other night we were out at this GCSB meeting, right? And the GCSB is like the NSA of New Zealand. In fact, it's part of the NSA, technically. And what they're doing now is they're passing this legislation to completely frack all of us and basically abolish privacy in New Zealand and bring us completely and totally into the global surveillance state that we call the New World Order globalists, that kind of thing. And today there is a protest at 2 p.m. In central Auckland at Altair Square. And I will be there with a 100-watt megaphone. I will be the loudest. And I will be saying the truth, whether all the other protesters want me to hear it or not. Last night I watched a film called The Dark Knight, and you know what's interesting about The Dark Knight is that you either you live long enough
and you become the bad guy, or you die the hero. And sometimes you need a hero who's willing to sacrifice themselves, essentially, to make the call and to make the choice that others can't make. And that's what I'm going to be doing at this protest today. I'm going to be talking the truth about the New World Order and what it truly means and what the surveillance system is actually a part of. And I expect that I will be hassled by the protesters. I expect that all the socialists and things like that all want to protect free speech and whatever will tell me to shut up and will tell me that, oh, the punters won't get it, etc., etc., etc. I don't care what they think because they're wrong. It's just that simple. All right, that's out of the way. My very special guest, Paul Levy, welcome to the program. He's a pioneer in the field of spiritual emergence. And I'm a pioneer in the art of microphone awareness. Yeah. All right. There we go. There's the right setting. Paul is a pioneer in the field of spiritual emergence, as well as an innovator in the field of dreaming, both night dreams as well as waking dreams. So he's in the television, I bet. A Tibetan Buddhist practitioner for over 30 years. He has intimately studied with some of the greatest spiritual masters of Tibet and Burma. He is the author of The Madness of George Bush, a reflection of our collective psychosis, as well as Wetiko, the greatest epidemic sickness known to humanity. His last book, Dispelling Wetiko, has had a lot of great reviews, like this one. Quote, "I always look forward to reading Paul's work. It stimulates me to greater heights of lucidity, disturbs me enough to awaken me out of my complacency, and encourages me to fly on the wings of the creative imagination. The world would be a better place if everyone read this book. His vision is a royal gift for all of us. It makes me want to sing. Bravo." There's some glowing reviews there, Paul. I'm sure you'll be happy with that. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
And I missed what it was that you wanted to talk about, but I guess I'll find out. So why don't you just go right ahead and explain what you want to talk about today?
Sure. Okay. Well, what I would like to talk about is what my new book is about, which is basically an inquiry into the psycho-spiritual disease of the soul that we all potentially have as it exists in the collective unconscious of our species. And it's potentially taking us down, and it's informing the very self and other destruction that we are currently enacting, both individually, within ourselves, interpersonally, between each other, and collectively on the world stage. And it's at the root of all the evil that we're playing out, both personally and archetypically. And yet what the book is pointing out, so all indigenous cultures from time immemorial, all cultures based on wisdom have been articulating this disease, this mind parasite, this psychic vampire, this tapeworm, this virus of the psyche. And so I've just translated it into a modern psychological idiom. And yet what I've discovered, and what a lot of people have discovered, not just me, I'm more the translator, that encoded in this illness that's actually destroying us, it actually can help us to wake up to the dreamlike nature of reality. And that's what the whole book is about. And so people all over the world.
So this is, so it's about archons, psychopaths, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. The Gnostics call archons is exactly what the Native American people call Wetiko, or however you say it. You can say it a number of different ways. That's the way I say it. But right, it's exactly about the archons of Gnosticism.
Yeah. Don't touch me there. Wetiko. And I also wanted to iterate that this is something that we've covered on the show twice in the last week. We had two roundtable discussions, first about psychopaths and the second about archons as well. And there's a number of different things we've discovered about them. Number one, the most surprising for me was that they're infectious. They can actually take your mind over. That's really crazy.
That's how they work. They're contagious. And they work through the channel of the unconscious blind spot in the psyche. And if somebody who's taken over and is a carrier of it, and keep in mind, we all potentially have it. So it makes no sense to say, oh, that person, you know, is possessed by it, like they're separate from us, because the only way to see it is to recognize the dreamlike nature of reality in which we're all interconnected and we're just characters in each other's dreams. But when you see that we're interconnected and interdependent and not separate, and you discover that, oh my God, if somebody is a carrier of it, if they're at that moment taken over by it, and if we don't see that, and if we actually support them, then it actually gets into our psyche through our unconscious blind spot in such a way that it compels us to act itself out, and then we become unwittingly the channel for its incarnation, and simultaneously it hides itself from being seen. So it is very infectious. It's contagious. It's actually what the indigenous people call the Watiko virus. It's a collective psychosis. And if you haven't, you know, I'm sure you're aware that we're in the middle of a psychic epidemic, a collective psychosis of titanic proportions. And yet part of the psychosis is that very few people are even talking about it.
Mm. Well, it was occurring to me during the past roundtable discussions that is this infection transmittable via electronic communication?
Well, the thing is, it's actually contagious via like an infinitude of different channels. And when you see all this as a dream, this whole world,
one of those channels, of course, being Fox News. Go ahead.
Yeah. Then you see there are multiple channels of transmission. So it gets into us via our unconscious blind spot, but it's continually pummeling our psyche through the mainstream media is one of the major organs of propaganda of the Watiko virus. It'll co-opt whatever's available to us to become its mode of transmission. So sure, definitely.
Mm. Well, it's funny you should say this because just yesterday I was, I think we had a discussion about aliens, and one of the listeners on my Facebook page comes out and says that I'm promoting Satanism, that I'm a psychopath and things like that, just because we're discussing the topic of aliens on the show and had a guest on to talk about it.
Right. And that shouldn't surprise you, because the way Watiko works is when, for example, somebody is actually pointing at it and shedding light on it, because when you see it and find its name and see how it operates and just, you know, flood light on it, it takes away its power. So when somebody, whether it's with you or me or whoever, when we're actually in the role of actually exposing it and shedding light on it, people who are still infected by it are then going to see us as the ones who are like the bad guys, or are the ones who are crazy, or the ones who are like demon infested, when actually they're seeing their own reflection.
You know, that's actually what occurred to me most is I've dealt with a number of these people. And it's what's funny is that in the same sentence of accusing me of something, they'll do the exact something that they're accusing you of.
Yeah. Well, that's a main quality of Watiko. In other words, I talk about all of this in my book because I say basically that people who are taken over by Watiko, what they're accusing other people of doing is what they themselves are doing, but they don't see it. So it's like an inversion where they self-righteously think they're the ones who are awake, but they're actually reacting to their own, like their own reflection in the mirror.
Like a they're like budgies, you know, some kind of a mindless parrot of a bird just sitting there. There's my friend over there, and I'm not alone. Actually, you are alone, and you're the only one who thinks like you do because you're freaking psychotic, mate.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I could just describe how it works, because this is what my whole book is about, is mapping it, you know, of how this mind virus works. So it shapeshifts, and it will assume your form. So it takes it, you know, it puts you on and putting you on having a double meaning it fools you, but it puts you on as if you're a suit of clothes. And if you don't see what's going on, the next thing you know, you will identify with its thought forms and its impulses, assuming they're your own. And then you unwittingly start acting out on these impulses that you believing are your own, coming from your own mind, but you're actually feeding the parasite. It's like when a tapeworm gets in your system, it will secrete chemicals in such a way that you begin to crave food that actually feeds the tapeworm, and all the while you believe you're feeding yourself, but it grows bigger until it kills the host, which is you. And that's the way the Wattico virus works, you know, and it works via our unconsciousness of it. Like, as soon as we start to get switched onto it and to become conscious of it, then it has no power over us. So it will do everything in its power to stop that from happening.
Is it possible to get these entities out of people once they've fully taken control? Like, is George H.W. Bush beyond redemption or not?
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting question because, you know, and I'm not sure I have a, you know, a real sort of this definitive answer for that.
I'll take that as a no then.
Well, but it is the case, right? Well, that's one potential answer, but it is the case that certain people are so possessed by these you know, whatever you call them, these viruses, these mind viruses, that it could be for this lifetime that they're, in a way, they're not able to be redeemed. And, you know, but the thing which is important is, like, with George W. Bush or his father, you begin, like, why I wrote my book about the madness of Bush. I was pointing out that he was so taken over by this psychic disease that we could say he was the incarnation of it in human form, which is to say he's the revelation of it, which means when you see this as a dream and you realize George W. Bush is not separate from us, he's actually the objective, he's objectively showing us what that illness looks like. It's a formless higher dimensional illness that exists in our own mind, and there it is in front of us. And if we recognize that George W. Bush is incarnating and actually revealing that, it also dissolves the sense of separation, and out of that comes compassion.
Well, and that was another thing that occurred to me. What if you spiked their drink with an ecstasy tablet that gives you overwhelming, arching feelings of empathy? Would it work?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I've seen people who are really taken over by it who will do certain, you know, these sacred substances. And what typically happens is that their perceptions at a certain point will get filtered through their illness. You see, here's something important to understand. Oh, okay, it's actually something like that really can help us to see it, but I might just wait till we come back after the break to discuss this, because...
Yeah, I think that's good, because that's right. A cliffhanger. Ladies and gentlemen, sorry to do this to you, but we need to hold your attention until after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go anywhere.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. One of my great heroes is, in fact, Bill Hicks, mostly because he's kind of he woke me up so monumentally to just how hilarious scumbaggery actually can be, which I think is a really healthy coping mechanism because, hey, if you don't laugh at the scumbaggery, you'll probably be destroyed and have your nuggety brain places corrupted by it. My very special guest is Paul Levy. And is it pronounced Levy or Levy? Because if it's pronounced...
No, you were pronouncing it. I was actually impressed. So, yeah.
Okay. Because if it was pronounced Levy, I was going to make a New Orleans joke. And like we're going to try and open you up or something like that, Katrina style. Now, we were talking over the break about how when you're being attacked by these people, you can't really go back and attack them back because it's a feedback loop. They send out negative energy, and if you return negative energy to them, you're actually feeding them, and they get worse.
Yeah. They actually feed off of fear and off of your unconscious reactions to them. And so that's kind of why it's really important to understand what their nature is. And so just to, you know, to trip out, because from the objective point of view, these seeming entities that, you know, indigenous people call Watiko or the Archons, they actually don't even objectively exist at all, separate from your own mind. So that's what's really interesting, because these seeming, and I always say seeming entities because that's the way they appear, but I don't want to invest them with any sort of ultimate reality. They can actually destroy us individually, collectively, our entire species, and they actually don't even exist. And that's pointing at something. That's pointing at the incredible creative power that's inherent in our own mind that we're not awake to.
Well, we've got the power over them, and but the problem is we don't recognize that we have it, much like the people versus the New World Order. The people have the power, but they think that the New World Order does, and it's a deception. If they would simply realize their own internal power as a human race, we could throw off our chains, throw off the scumbaggery.
And that's even true on the individual dimension like that. What the Watiko virus does, it actually subverts our own genius for co-creating reality against us in a way that's destroying us. And so when each one of us actually really floods light on this, you know, this demonic entity that actually is this daimonic entity, and the word daimon, it actually means the guiding spirit. And, you know, it actually has to do with one's genius. When you actually see and shed light on it, and see how it works, then you actually are able to access your genius in a way such that you can actually co-dream a whole new dream. And that's evolutionary, and that's what this is all about. It's almost like, to the extent we're unconscious of these parts of ourselves, of course they get dreamed up in a seemingly negative way, and then we just, you know, react to them and feed it and act out our unconsciousness in a destructive, self and other destructive way. And yet the whole point is, once we actually recognize that something is being shown to us, then we could connect with our own light. And that's evolution.
You've heard of the story of the cosmic schmuck?
No, please enlighten me.
All right. So how do you figure out if you're a cosmic schmuck? The answer is, you never question whether or not you are the cosmic schmuck. If you're always thinking from time to time, am I the cosmic schmuck here? Then it's very unlikely that you'll actually become him, because you're questioning it all the time. You're self-analyzing.
And that's really cool, because the thing about Watiko is that you discover part of its nature is that at any moment, any of us could be taken over. And, you know, think about it. Who among us has not, in the course of our lives, unwittingly, with the best of intentions, you know, acted out their unconscious in a way that's been hurtful, either to ourselves or to somebody we're close to? So when you realize that, oh my God, any of us could unwittingly become the instrument to act out this, like, you know, this sort of negative energy, then that cultivates a sense of like being humble. And having like that, the humbleness, that's an inoculation, an immunization toward, you know, from the Watiko bug.
And also, I wanted to explain the reptilian brain response as well, because everybody's had these, and this is how you know whether or not you're acting on your instinct, your reptilian brain, or you're actually thinking about it. You ever said something or done something, and you know that had you taken a few deep breaths, counted to 10, you wouldn't have said the same thing, you wouldn't have done the same thing? That's right. The reptilian brain response. It's an instant just...
That's to be taken over. So that, like I was saying, Watiko is this daimonic energy. Now, daimonic means it's an archetypal transpersonal. It has to do with that reptilian energy. It's a transpersonal archetypal energy that literally possesses us, or groups of us, or our entire species in such a way that we then become compelled to act it out. And so that's when somebody is taken over by the Watiko virus, they have no idea that they're possessed. They just feel so much completely fully themselves. And yet they're actually, it's almost like they're this puppet on a string, and they're the instrument for this archetypal transpersonal energy to compel them to become its instrument of incarnation into the third dimension.
Is it possible to recognize whether or not you're being taken over by these entities and then get rid of them?
Yeah. That's what my whole book is about. Sure. Because, for example, when, you know, I mean, because that is the question. And one thing I was going to say right before the break, one way to understand how these entities work, they, like I said, they operate through the unconscious, through the blind spots. They work through the projective tendencies of our own mind because we're always projecting. Think about what a projection is. It's like when you're in a dream, it's an inkblot. It's a projection. And whatever we actually project moment by moment instantaneously gets reflected back by the dream. Now, that's showing us something because say if you're holding a particular point of view in a dream, right? And so you're seeing through a particular lens. Well, what is the dream but a reflection, a projection of your own mind? So if you hold a viewpoint in a dream, the dream has no choice but to shapeshift and in no time whatsoever instantaneously reflect back and give you all the evidence you need to confirm the seeming objectivity of your viewpoint. And then if you don't see that process, then all of a sudden now you become convinced of the objective truth of your viewpoint, which you become even more fixed in because now you have seeming evidence to confirm it. And now you by becoming even more fixed in that viewpoint, you'll even see in more that way, which will then ad infinitum, dream up the dream to offer even more proof confirming your seeming the truth of your viewpoint. The point is that's an infinitely self-created feedback loop in which you've actually entranced yourself by your genius to call forth reality. And understanding that helps you to snap out of the spell because it's exactly like being under a spell of Watiko, of evil.
Like being a religious fanatic. There's people out there who believe absolute insanity. You know, they read religious texts and they interpret them completely wrong. And yet, right. Anybody questions anything that they say that is based on that is loosely based and completely made up on this religious text is therefore an agent of Satan.
Yeah, well, that's an important thing to understand because it's not just one person who will hold that like completely insane viewpoint, but typically they then will attract other people who are also, entranced in a particular way, and then they'll both reinforce and feed off of and into each other's madness in a way that an impenetrable bubble will get conjured up around them, that and any reflection or any evidence that shows the falseness of their viewpoint or their madness will then get perversely interpreted against the messenger to then confirm even more deeply their madness. And that's like this form of like this narcissism, this collective narcissism. And another name for that is collective psychosis. And we see that both in the religious realm and the political realm and all different dimensions. So you see, and that has to do with the infectious, contagious nature of this mind virus.
Mm-hmm. And I always worry about this as well because I'm really good at speaking and getting viewpoints across and things like that. And my great fear is that I might get taken over by one of these parasites and all my talents and my skills for that I'm currently using for good will be flipped around and I'll start manipulating people and being a real evil scumbag. And I really fear that potential of how much damage I could really do to people's lives if that was to happen.
And that's really good that you're aware of that potential, because, like we were saying before, that's an inoculation, against the virus. Now, the thing is, too, is that having that continual self-reflection and that mindfulness and also surrounding yourself with people who aren't just always like just patting you on the back and like these yes men, but are actually having the courage to hold up mirrors when they see you get out of balance because we're all a work in progress. That's really important to conjure up like a real supportive community where, and one way to understand this, when you're awakening in a dream, it's easy to get absorbed back in the dream. But then when you connect with a bunch of people who are awakening in the dream, you realize we can all help each other to stabilize our lucidity. And so, and that's a real spiritual community.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, I feel really blessed as well, Paul, because I've surrounded myself with people who aren't yes men, with free thinking individuals who like what I do. But the second that I do something that they don't like, I hear about it instantly.
That's wonderful. That's fantastic.
And it causes me to reflect on it. Yeah.
I have all these groups and people. I so empower them to call me on my shit because that's what I want. I want to deepen my own.
We can't say those words. We can't say those words on FCC regulated radio, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Even though they're appropriate. And this really irritates me about freedom of speech in the United States is there isn't any. All right. And I just want to a little message passed on to the FCC. It's two letters, F you. All right. Well, anyway, Levy, continue.
Yeah. So one of the things about Watiko, because, you know, I just describe it in my book in as many ways as I can imagine, okay? And because, you know, one of the solutions is to get in touch with the sacred creative imagination, you know, that we all have to actually create our world. And the thing about Watiko, it's a form of blindness, of psychic blindness. But not only is it a form of blindness, but it's a form of blindness that it believes that it's sighted, but not only does it believe that it's sighted, it believes that it's more sighted than anyone else. So it's completely perverse. And, you know, so, yeah, that's why when you see somebody taken over by this bug to try to proselytize or convince them, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't help because, you know, it would be much better to actually try and teach somebody the art of how to see. Okay.
A great example here. I was talking about this possible entity who's accusing me of being a Satanist. Here's one of his comments. Now to go and thumb down every single video he has ever uploaded. It's a start, a first step in this campaign.
Wow. Yeah, that's...
What a waste of time. Have you no life?
Right. No, totally. And that's something, I mean, we have to become accustomed. I mean, me too. I get all these emails of people who read my work and really appreciate it and have their eyes opened, or just they basically say, wow, you've been able to find the language for stuff that I've been sensing or feeling but didn't have the words for. But then every now and then I'll hear from that same guy, you know, that guy who's like, oh, I'm like crazy or I'm a demonist or whatever. And you just have to be okay with that because, and that to me, that's showing us that we're on the right path, that we're actually triggering people like that.
Well, yeah, the Lancaster bomber pilots who used to run bombing missions over Germany from England had a saying, when you're copping the flak, which means when you're being shot at, you're over the target. And that's when you need to keep dropping your payload. And I don't know about you and how you feel about this, but I've started to revert back to maybe my earlier Christian upbringing, my earlier Catholic upbringing, and feel as though there's a war between light and dark. There really truly is. The light is about awareness, about acceptance, about having a conscience and being kind and loving and that kind of thing. And the dark is the antithesis to everything like that. And it is a true war, but it's not only without outside of us, it's also within us.
Yeah. No, I fully agree with that. In the person who wrote the foreword to my book talks, she quoted, there's this quote from the Bible, something about, you know, the powers of darkness, it's powers and principalities. So the idea being it's not just something in like us as people, but it's some sort of like more cosmic powers of light and dark that are in a sense in like this cosmic drama or cosmic conflict that we've gotten drafted into being the intermediaries or in the middle of. And it's the ultimate point is that those light energies and those dark energies, they're actually in us. So that's one of the ways of getting entranced and falling under the spell of the Watiko demon is when we see the evil out there, we then concretize it as being outside of ourselves and we don't recognize it's our own reflection. And by having that sense of separation, that feeds the demon.
I once went to a protest and said through a megaphone, John Key's our Prime Minister right now, and John Key is a scumbag! And then somebody came up to me and said, well, Vinny, actually, if you accuse John Key of being a scumbag, it means that you're just projecting a reflection of yourself. And I go, that's right. And unless I expose the scumbaggery within myself as well, I'll be dead. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Live from the Chateau de Rothschild, nestled nicely in the hills of Sicily, where incidentally a 33rd degree Freemason started up this whole thing. And one of our special guests is Paul Levy, and we're talking about psychopaths and scumbaggery and the Archons and the Wendigo, which, if you're not careful, You might want to call your children if they're being naughty. Welcome back, sir. Now, we were talking over the break about how it's really good to meet other people that are of like mind. And now on the last couple weeks of this show, about 8 hours out of 20 have been talking about psychopaths. And you said that that's not an accident.
Yeah, it's totally not an accident. I mean, it has to do with, you know, there's a collective psychosis going on. And one way to understand it, you know, from the psychological, you know, in the book, one of the aspects I talk about is the psychological point of view. And when we get, when we're, you know, because we're all in trauma, our species is suffering, you know, a form of PTSD. And what happens, you know, it's very simple. So we'll be in trauma, we split off from a part of ourselves, from our whole, part of our wholeness gets disassociated. And if we don't, if we aren't able to integrate that, that split off part develops an autonomy, and it, the word is it becomes an autonomous complex, and that'll have a seeming life and seemingly independent will of its own that's contrary to our own will. Now, the ancient people had this other name for autonomous complexes. It's what they would call a demon. Okay, and it's exactly what Watiko is, or the Archons are, but the origin, it's important to not forget, the origin is our own mind. And so, you know, and the way to even more deeply, the way to understand just the psychology behind this phenomena is an inquiry into our own darkness, into our own shadow, because to the extent that we're not, you know, really reflective and owning our own shadow, well, then what happens? We disassociate from it, and we split it off, and we project it out outside of ourselves. And being that this is a dream, and that this is so important to understand, when we project out our own shadow, similar, just think about what I was just talking about a few minutes ago, about when in a dream you hold a viewpoint, the dream will supply evidence to confirm your viewpoint. When you project out the shadow, well, somebody who has even the slightest little hook, will they'll be the recipient of your shadow projection, like you put your coat on a hook to hang it. Well, when you project out the shadow, you know, onto whoever's the recipient who has those qualities, that will amplify those dark, those evil qualities, which will make it more probable that they're going to manifest in that way. And as soon as they do, now you have evidence that the shadow is actually outside of yourself, which will confirm you and your viewpoint that the shadow isn't in you, it's out there. So you'll even more project the shadow. And of course, they're doing the same thing to you. And then what ultimately happens, you try to destroy the person who's embodying your own shadow, which is a reflection of how you're actually trying to get rid of your own evil. And by doing that, you actually have become possessed by the very evil that you're trying to destroy. And what I've just described is an articulation of how the Watiko virus works.
It possesses you, projects an image, a false reality for you, and if you react and march to its tune of that false reality, it sticks with you and takes you over completely. Is that about right?
And not only does it take you over in the sense that you become possessed, but part of it is that you unconsciously identify with it. So it's the weirdest psychological phenomena, but it's very true when you just see it in yourself. When you become taken over by something, you can't see it because you're identical with it. So you become unconsciously, you know, you have an identification with it. And yeah, just what you described, then that whole dynamic, you know, if you don't have insight into it, then you've unwittingly become an instrument for the very evil that you're fighting against in the world.
It's kind of like fluoride. You know how fluoride reduces IQ, right, in the Zhang study. Mm-hmm. How would you know that you're slightly dumber than before? And the answer is you wouldn't. Similar thing. Yeah.
It's the same thing. When we're possessed, by definition, we don't know we're possessed, you know? And that's why it's really, really helpful to have a real awake community of people who we can all, like, reflect back to each other when we see ourselves getting slightly out of balance, because that's really, really helpful.
It's kind of like how the ancient Egyptians used light bouncing off mirrors in order to light dark places and the pyramids and so on and so forth, right? So if you've got all this wonderful light coming in, but you've got none of these mirrors around you to help bounce it off, kind of thing, you're in the darkness.
Yeah. And the thing that I talk about, like, for example, there's a big in the town I live in, and I'm not going to name names, there is this, you know, the big sort of metaphysical, like, bookstore. and they won't even carry my new book because they're just so identified with the light that they, you know, they think, oh, I'm just focusing too much on evil. But the point of any sort of enlightenment is that it makes no difference at all how much light you have if it doesn't actually shed light on darkness. And so what I'm pointing at is the incredible importance of flooding light on the darkness within ourselves and in the world, you know, as the way to wake up. And that's profoundly, profoundly important.
Thank you so much for saying that, because I'm sure there's all these new agey people that always tell me that, oh, Vinny, you're focusing too much on the negative, such and such, and blah blah blah, and it's all your problem, it's all your projection. No, yeah. No, evil freaking exists, and if you freaking ignore it, it'll kill you.
Yeah, no, that's really, it's really, if I can say a few words more about that, because it's really important to understand that I talk about exactly the example with the bookstore in my book. I say by being identified with the light so fully, this bookstore is actually an incredible fear against the darkness. So they're avoiding the darkness, they're contracting against the darkness, and by doing that, they're unwittingly feeding it. Now, that's very different than if you see the darkness and then you choose as a sovereign being where you want to invest your attention. Then you can choose, oh, I see you talking to the darkness. Now I want to invest my attention in creating the world I want to live in. That doesn't feed evil. Then you're actually an instrument for the light.
Kind of like, I like those words. I see you. And this is actually, those three words have been running through my mind recently. I've been thinking about a couple of psychopaths have done me wrong and a couple of that are in charge of my nation right now that are doing my people wrong. And those three words have been coming through my head the whole time. I see you. I see you for what you are.
Yeah. But here's the thing, you know, to not forget, you see, the trippiest thing about the Wetiko virus is that it collapses the seeming boundary between the inner and the outer in such a way that it's an inner disease of the soul that actually explicates itself through the medium of the outside world in a synchronistic fashion. So when we see somebody, you know, who's like, say, this leader or say, and, you know, fully taken over by the Wetiko virus, and they're a real psychopath at that particular moment, and we actually see them, you know, if we actually think they're separate from us, then we ourselves have fallen under the spell of Wetiko because it feeds off of polarization. But when we see them as, oh yeah, they're embodying what it is to be a psychopath, to be taken over by Wetiko, and we recognize they're a reflection of that part of ourselves, then we discover, oh, this inner disease of the soul that exists inside of my own mind is actually getting synchronistically expressed via the outside world. That's to wake up, and that point of view dispels Wetiko. And what I just described, that's to recognize what I call this being a dream, the dreamlike nature of reality.
So in other words, more correctly, would just be, I see you, and I see you within me as well.
Yeah. And that's why the Wetiko dissolver par excellence is compassion. Because when you actually see through the illusion of separation, the expression of that realization is compassion. But sometimes compassion is fierce. It's not like compassion is always smiley face and patting each other on the back. Sometimes compassion says no and sets a boundary and is incredibly fierce when you see somebody acting out something that's actually hurtful, whether it be to the environment or to the whole population.
And I've also got another thing. Is it okay to be angry? Is it okay to be enraged with bad things going on, or is that simply a way of getting yourself infected?
Yeah. Well, the thing is it's important to make the distinction between, you know, if we get, because everybody, how can you not have rage and be in this world with what's playing out? You
would have to be insane. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, you know, it depends if you just get, if you unconsciously get possessed by the anger and the rage and you just act it out, then you're actually feeding evil and feeding the Wetiko germ because it feeds off of, you know, like certain negative energies. But if you access your rage and your anger and constructively, creatively, instead of destructively, but constructively express it, in whatever creative way, yeah, that actually is what that dispels Watiko. So that would be, you know, that's why in Tibetan Buddhism they'll have these deities, and some of them are peaceful, but others of them are the really pissed or these wrathful deities. That's what that's symbolically expressing.
So it's okay to be angry and to be full of rage and to go out there and but the thing is, you can't actually sort of like the saying that you can't visit hell without taking some of it back with you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like you got to be really careful.
Yeah. Well, it's like, in a way, we're all potentially these like sort of healers or shamans in training. And I'll talk about that after the break, but I think that's a really important viewpoint for all of us to understand.
Okay, all shamans in training. I actually really want to cover that because the potential for me, as I mentioned before, if you've been endowed with particular talents and so on and so forth, which I believe I have been, they can so easily be used to hurt and maim and destroy and be twisted and manipulated. And I'm sick of being twisted. I'm sick of being manipulated. There's only really two things I really don't tolerate: being told what to do and ordered around, and being accused of being something that I'm not. Those are the two things that will happen that I just can't stand. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastonshow.com.